Next Step 347, January 29, 2015.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazquez's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the contemporary and the classical, between the emotional, the spiritual, and the physical. In fact, we are a podcast that, well, takes the next step in looking at life through the most ancient form of all Christianity, Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. If you are ready for this Armodox look, I know I am. Let's take the next step. I'm recording from Epostle West. I'm in the Glendale Studios. A nice day outside, a little bit cloudy, but I did have a great, great meeting this morning, so I'm kind of like excited about everything and excited about what's going on in all of our lives. It is midwinter. Yes, this coming Monday is going to be the midwinter feast, or as we call it, Groundhog's Day, and it is Candlemas in the West. Of course, we have a little bit of time before Candlemas for us. It's going to be on February 14th. A lot of good stuff happening on that day. A lot of love and energy. I'll be talking about that in a little bit, too. Hey, some of you caught it last week. I know it was a little bit too late for me to put it on the show last week, but I got a call, right? I think it was that same day, or maybe a little bit afterwards, maybe the following day, right after I finished the podcast, I was contacted by a guy named Harry Bay, who has a syndicated radio show. It is called Harry Bay USA. And I was on his show. I was a guest on his show last Saturday night. And it was a one-hour show, kind of a talk show, call-in show with questions from the audience. It was interesting, to say the least. I had a good time doing it. It was fun, actually, being in a different kind of studio. Here we are at Epostle West, and we've got Ken over in one corner with his headphones on. I've got Susie taking notes. And then when you go to a radio station and you see all of these places, it just, you know, you kind of like whets your appetite for what can be. But it was really exciting. And I was on his show answering questions from the audience. A lot of like biblical questions. I don't know. You know, it made me think like, you know, how much people want to accept the Bible as this book of rules and regulations. It's very interesting when I hear people talk about the Bible in those terms, how limited it is. You know, the Bible is a reflection of God. It is God's breath, as we call it, the Asvazashunch, the breath of God. It is much more than just a rule book. It is not just an owner's manual to life. It is really the means by which we find Christ through the written word, but it is not the only means by which we find Christ. And I've shared this with you many, many times, and being on a show like Harry's show, it kind of brought it home. You know, people asking questions, what is salvation? How do you get to salvation? You know, it's like, Bible is not to be read as a book of 1, 2, 3. These are the rules that you have to follow. And unfortunately, a lot of times what we hear on these talk shows and in general, people who quote scriptures, they will take bits and pieces of this or that and not making the connection of the entirety of the Bible. This is very important. The Bible is one book. Yeah, it is. It's made up of many books, chapters. It is a collection of books that have been put together, that have been written through the centuries. Yeah, it's not like somebody just sat down and said, hey, let's write a Bible. But there was oral traditions that were codified later on and written down. There's the experience of Christ here on earth. There's the letters of St. Paul. There's the revelation. So much out there. And really, when you look at the Bible, it's very important never to lose sight of what the Bible is. The Bible is one book from beginning to end about God's love for humanity. And unfortunately, we get caught up with this story or that story. And, you know, those are really nice things. But never forget that our salvation comes from Christ, not from a book. I'll say that again, and I know there's people who object to that. I know many times I'll put a video up on YouTube, our weekly show and everything, and then we get these Bible bangers who start polluting our mailbox with all kinds of stuff. Like, you know, you're going to die in hell, you're going to fry there, and all this kind of stuff. It's very nice that these people consider themselves on par with God to decide the destiny of another human being. But it's very, very disturbing to feel that, you know, we've gotten to that point. Because what we're seeing is this fanaticism, what we sometimes call this fundamentalism. And that fundamental mentality is something that you've got to be very, very, very careful about. As I've shared with you many times, when Jesus pointed to somebody and said, that person is a hypocrite, he could do that because he was sinless. You and I cannot do that. We cannot point to somebody and say, oh, look at that guy. Because all of us are filled with sins. This Sunday, I'm going to share this with you. I haven't shared this with anybody all week. It's been, I don't want to say it's been bothering me, but it's been inside of me. A young man was in church with his mother. It was obvious he was mentally disturbed. Probably had some physical handicaps as well. And there was a portion during the Divine Liturgy where the priest descends from the altar in symbolic reference to Christ descending from heaven. And so the priest goes through the congregation with his cross in his hand. And to me, this is a very important part in the service because it gauges our reaction to God. You see, it's very important that we understand that our faith is about you and me, us relating to God. And I was reading through the prayers during the Divine Liturgy. It says, Der Asvaz Im. Yes, this is from the church that is before all churches, okay? The prayers in the Divine Liturgy says, it reflects about God as Der Asvaz Im. My Lord God. My Lord God. It is a personal God. It is a personal reference. You know, sometimes when you talk about personal Savior, you talk about personal God, everybody wants to dump you into this Protestant category. Hey, before there were Protestants, there was the church. There was the universal church, which referred to God as my Savior, referred to Christ as my Savior. Now, that being said, in this portion where the priest descends, he goes through the people and he has a cross in his hand and he's going through procession and it symbolizes Christ coming to earth and going through the difficulties and challenges of this world. And then at the end of the procession, the priest ascends back up to the altar, symbolizing that Christ ascended back to heaven. Now, think about what happens during that procession. The priest is walking through the congregation, and there are a variety of responses that people have to him. There are people who are consumed with all the bells and the whistles, or what I like to call the hoopla, the excesses. They will reach out and touch the banner, the cross that's coming before them. And this is true. They will completely blindside. They don't even consider that the priest is there. They're touching things, feeling the different banners and the blessings that are coming from those places. They have incense in their hands, and they're ready to put the incense inside the censer. And will completely lose sight that the priest is walking through, bringing this message of hope and love to the people. Okay, that's one group of people. There are other people who just kind of like, look, these are the people that are just sitting there. They've come to a divine liturgy. Someone has told them that they need to be there, perhaps because of a requiem service, because of certain prayers that have been needed, or perhaps out of curiosity. I don't know. They are there. They'll just look from a distance sometimes, with amusement, more than amusement, maybe with curiosity too. They'll look at the priest going through the procession and wonder why people are approaching him and everything. There are other people who will approach the priest and kiss his cross. And yet there are the enthusiastic ones. What may be likened to the zealots. In zealousness, they come there. Is that a word, right? They are zealous in their faith. They will jump over one another. This is true. They will jump over one another to kiss the cross, to kiss the apron of the priest, to show their reverence for God. Now, all of these different people that are out there, God bless them, and let only God judge what is in their hearts. Perhaps that person that stays away has some kind of problem with the priest, has some problem with faith. You don't know. And they're dealing with it. Everybody's in their own time. But what I'm saying is that there are all different reactions. And you can think of many, many other different reactions on top of the four that I gave you. Okay, there's the zealousness, there's the indifference, there's people who miss the mark and just kind of like go for the excesses and so on. Okay. Now, this young man, like I said, it was definite he was emotionally disturbed. Physically, he had some kind of difficulty. As soon as I approached, I came down from the altar and started going through the congregation. He started running back and forth through the pews. And his running, when I say running, he was actually kind of bothering people too. He was kind of pushing people, but he was going in back and forth. If you could imagine that pew, what is it? Maybe about 20 foot, 15 foot pew. He's going from one side to the other. His mother or somebody was with him who seemed to be embarrassed, at the same time wasn't controlling him. He was a grown man, and he was making noises. He was making noises that were couldn't be understood. And I approached him, and he ran away. He ran to the other side of the church. So I'm approaching people with the cross in my hand, and I continued. By the time I made myself, so if you can imagine that the church is, you know, this long rectangle, there is a centerpiece, the center spot that the priest gets to at the back of the church, at the very back. So he's going procession throughout the whole rectangle of the church. He's come down the altar and he's now going through. He gets to the center point and looks straight on at the altar and senses the altar. And it was at that point that the boy came running over to me. And he was running kind of awkwardly, and I didn't know what to expect. He came right up to me, and obviously he had missed the idea that you're supposed to kiss the cross. He knew something had to be done. And I extended the cross to him, and he looked at it, and then I placed it in front of his lips, and he kissed it. But he was frazzled. There was something going on. And I don't know what it was. At that moment, I just took the cross and placed it on his head. And I blessed him. And he just calmed down. He just calmed down immediately. And I went through the rest of the procession, ascended back up to the altar, and continued the Divine Liturgy, continuing my prayers. It was throughout the Divine Liturgy that I kept hearing him, because he would be making these sounds, these, I don't want to say obnoxious, because obnoxious might insinuate that he was trying to do it intentionally. I know there was no ill will on his part. It was just uncontrollable, obnoxious sounds. So I knew he was there, and I kept thinking back on that reflection in his face, reflection in his eyes. And there was a prayer that I was reciting. It was one of the silent prayers that the priest recites during the holy, 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 surp, surp, surp. And it recounts that how Christ, in his love, came and did not forget us. He did not abandon us. And I was moved to tears, because I kept thinking about this young man out there. And I realized that each of us, the reason why I was moved to tears, this is what the realization I came to. The reason why I was moved to tears was because acceptance that I too am a sinner. And when I understand that I too am a sinner, I understand that there is no difference between me and anyone who has that designation of being physically handicapped, mentally unstable. I mean, we are all basically handicapped. We are all basically unstable as it comes as human beings, because we're all part of a sinful life. And this doesn't mean we're bad people. I want to emphasize this. Sin is not a bad thing. Sin merely means we are human. And so we have desires. We have feelings. We have emotions. We have handicaps, whether they are physical, mental, emotional, psychological, that all prevent us from being the perfect person that we can be. And so I was really moved to tears at that moment, and I realized that the tears were not about that young man, but a reflection on me, on who am I that I dare to stand in front of this altar, and the only reason that I'm standing there is but by the grace of God. Not because I'm a great person, not because I've done anything good, but because of the grace of God. Now, can we understand that for ourselves in all that we do? Everything that we have, everything that we have accumulated, it is because of the grace of God. Because of God's love for us. It always amazes me when people come to God and seek God for different reasons. Because they're in trouble, because they're having a rough time, because financially they might be in difficult waters. They seek God. But when things are going okay, they forget about giving a thanks to God, even a nod to God. Hey, like, thank you. You know, I made it. I did it. We always forget that. Just yesterday, a lady named Nina Simonian came to my office. I know, Nina Simone, the blues singer. I thought of that same thing, yes. No, she wasn't Nina Simone. This is an older Armenian lady. She came to my office so cheery, you could not believe. She said, Deadeye, I have to talk to you today. Well, you know what? Here at St. Peter in Glendale, we had a tradition a few years ago. We produced these small little piggy banks that has the family name on there, and we sent it home with everybody, and so you're supposed to put your change in there. And this woman, every month, like clockwork, she brings her piggy bank in. And she sat down with me for a few minutes. I don't take the piggy bank, by the way. We have a cool lady in the other room whose name is Hripsik. Oh, she is cool. She gets these piggy banks. If you could just see her, she's from Iran and speaks with the Armenian dialect of Iran. And just beautiful lady. She looks at these piggies that come in here, these little piggy banks. They are actually piggies, okay? Pink piggy banks. Sometimes. Excuse me. I'm just thinking about her reflection on these piggy banks. Sometimes she gets these piggy banks and goes, she goes, oh, der Herr, es ich love Hamads Gerads Hosige. Dead-eyed father, this is a well-eaten and well-drank piggy. It loses maybe in the translation, but in other words, it's a fat pig. There's a lot of money in this one. Anyway, Ripsik takes care of that. But getting back to Nina, she came into my office. She says, Dead-eyed, I just want to tell you, it's a beautiful day today. I just want to thank God for this beautiful blessing that I have in my church, my ability to walk to church. She says, I'm going to be 90 years old this year. She says, I do not want to be a burden on my children, so I take care of myself. Because I used to have a mother-in-law that would, I know how it goes. I'm not going to be in that house. I'm taking care of myself, and God takes care of me. Every morning I wake up with a prayer in my mouth, and every night I go to sleep saying a prayer, reading the Gospels, and definitely reading the Psalms. She says, this is what I do every single day. And I come to church on Sunday mornings and give thanks for the blessings, not only of what I have, but for the blessing of this church. That it is in my backyard, that I am able to come, that I am able to come down on my knees and say my prayers. I've got to tell you, I was so inspired by this woman. 90 years old, and she's just inspiring me. Maybe it's just the time of day right now. I'm so emotional about these things. But you know what? We need a little bit more of that kind of attitude. It is an attitude. It's the attitude that you put in yourself that, hey, you know what? Things are okay. I've got so much to be thankful for. And I could imagine at age 90, she's probably got her share of physical ailments as well as difficulties. But you know what? It was just a positive ray of light that came into my office. And it reminded me, Christ, what does he say? He says, I am the light of the world. As long as I am in the world, there cannot be darkness. But what does Christ say? He turns it around and he says, you are the light of the world. A candle that is lit cannot be hid. It is placed on the lampstand. You don't put it under the table. You put it on the lampstand so that it could illuminate the entire household. And here was this woman, Nina, coming into my office, illuminating, lighting up the life all around her. That's pretty powerful. And so I give you these two examples to kind of push us on our motion today. We're going to be talking a little bit about what's going on here and there. I'm going to share with you some things from Pope Francis as well. That's coming up in the second portion. But I thought I'd give you these two examples. One of a young man, a disturbed man, who really taught me a lesson on beauty. Another one of an elderly woman who taught me a lesson on love. And I wanted to share those two with you. I'm going to take a break right now. We'll listen to the song of the day. Be back in a couple minutes. Enjoy.
Mankind, dead kings, many things I can't define. Old Cajun's spots, wagons, butter your mind. Incense and peppermints, the color of time.
Who cares what games we choose? Little to win, but nothing to lose.
Incense and peppermints, meaningless mounts. Turn on, tune in, turn your eyes around.
Look what you saw.
You can do beatniks and politics, nothing is new. A yardstick for lunatics, one point of view.
Who cares what games we choose? to lose.
I didn't tell you what that song was at the beginning because I got scared that you might not listen to it. Incense and Peppermint, that is from the Strawberry Alarm Clock, going back to the 60s. And I've been like wandering back there. I know some of you accuse me of living in the past and staying over there. But you know what? I heard this song this week, and I listen to a wide variety of different stations throughout the week. I love my Pandora. I love my Live 365. You know, it's just so beautiful now that you've got the internet to share this music with. You kind of rediscover a lot of the tunes from the past, and this was one that kind of hit me. Incense and Peppermint. I remember back in the 60s, back in the early 70s, going through these little shops and finding different places where they had these kind of neat little things like incense and peppermint, and having strobe candles. Do you know what that is? You know the strobe lights that hit you really fast? They used to have these strobe candles that would be boom, 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 boom. That would hit you with this light. Anyway, I wanted to do this because I've been going back in memory lane in a different sense, too. I had an opportunity this week to listen to a fascinating book, one that I want to really share with my listeners, too. It is by Pope Francis when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires. It is called On Heaven and Earth. It is Pope Francis on faith, family, and the church in the 20th century. And I got to admit to you that I'm not reading it. I'm almost finished with it. I've been listening to it, been listening to the audio files of it. There's something about that kind of goes hand in hand with living in Southern California. You know, traffic is so atrocious. Sometimes it's so bad. And Susie's a big user of these kind of audio files because she has an incredible commute going out to her law library every day. And so she's one who always recommends this or that, you know, listen to this podcast. I go, Susie, how do you get a chance to listen to all this? Well, of course, she's sitting in her car, and what a beautiful time. You've got to deal with traffic one way or another. You might as well get some information. Check out a new book. Check out some kind of interesting literature or some talk, you know. And there's ample time here in Southern California to do that. And I've been listening to this book called On Heaven and Earth by Cardinal Bernoulli, today's Pope Francis. And it is just fascinating. I am going to put a link on today's show notes. Let me read to you what it says about it. It says, from the man who became Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio shares his thoughts on religion, reason, and the challenges the world faces in the 21st century. With Abraham Skorka, a rabbi and biophysicist. For years, Cardinal Bergoglio, Archbishop of Argentina, and Rabbi Skorka were tenacious promoters of interreligious dialogue on faith and reason. They both sought to build bridges among Catholicism, Judaism, and the world at large. On Heaven and Earth, originally published in Argentina in 2010, brings together a series of these conversations where both men talked about various theological and worldly issues, including God, fundamentalism, atheism, abortion, homosexuality, euthanasia, same-sex marriages, and globalization. From these personal and accessible talks comes a first-hand view of the man who would become a pope to 1.2 billion Catholics around the world in March 2013. Now, the book is divided into 29 chapters, and they're very relatively short chapters on God, on the devil, on atheism, on religions, on religious leaders, on disciples, on prayer, on guilt, on fundamentalism. It goes into many, many different areas that I just find fascinating. Listening to these men dialogue brings to mind the importance of that dialogue, and this is why I'm bringing it up today. In our Armenian tradition, we have what is known as the Gemaran. Gemaran is the place where people go to learn. It is a nice name for school. It literally, the word gemel means to walk. Means to walk. And this is the place where a student with his teacher would walk and engage in a conversation. Now, why do I bring this up? Because, as you know, from those of you who have listened in the past, know that I am just such a proponent of that dialogue. In fact, our Bible studies that we do, and we've broadcasted many of them, are called Questions in Faith. It's very important that, you know, we understand that you come to faith through this questioning process. So I'm listening to the Pope, and he's talking about everything we've been talking about over here. I am so in tune with this man. It's just such a refreshing voice. And I really want to encourage our listeners to check out this book. It is fascinating. And hopefully in the months to come, I'll be able to share bits and pieces. But today I wanted to just give it a basic overview of that process. Now, that process is an important one. A lot of times people think that faith is something that they just acquire by reading a Bible. Okay, I'm going to read the Bible, and now I'm going to know faith. Well, it doesn't end there. You know, there is an action element to faith. Faith in itself really doesn't mean anything. So you've got all the faith in the world, but how do you experience that faith? How do you work that faith into your life? Jesus says, love your enemies. Jesus says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. Jesus says, give to the poor. Jesus says this or that. He gives out commandments. Well, these are not just commandments that you put on a blackboard, or as every few years the issue comes up, you know, the Ten Commandments somebody has placed in a public space, and these are articles of faith, and they don't belong in public space, and so on and so on. Yes, I agree with that. They're not just commandments that just belong on a tablet. They have to be lived out in your life. And tragically, we fall short of living out those commandments. The commandment to not lie. The commandment to not steal. The commandment to not murder are amplified by our Lord Jesus Christ when he says that you have heard that this is what it was said, but I tell you, do not harbor those feelings in your heart. Well, let's take, for instance, the commandment, the most obvious one, the one that we know we can all agree on. Do not kill, okay? Do not kill. Jesus says, I tell you, if you're harboring anger in your heart, you are guilty of murder. Wow. What? Guilty of murder? Obviously, he can't mean that. I'm not going to go to the electric chair because of this. I'm not going to the gas chamber because I'm angry at my brother. But Jesus says that. So we either got to understand what he's saying in a broad sense, or we've got to just kind of relegate it to that, okay, this is another nice man talking. Now, if you believe that Jesus Christ is everything that he says he is, and we believe that he is, you've got to take this as, to use the term, gospel truth. This is the message that he came to give us, to deliver us. And this message, you cannot escape. You have to love with all your heart, mind, and soul. And in that love, there is no place for anger. There is no place for ill thoughts. And so once you start understanding in these terms, now you start questioning yourself. Well, what are these feelings that I have? What are these emotions that I have? And how do I use those emotions in my life? How are they being manifested in my life? Because we all have these difficulties that we're going through. And when we come down to some basic points in our life of healing, for instance, I think everyone will agree that at some point we all desire healing. No matter what it is, even the most conceited individual who will stand up and say, I'm perfect, will deep down understand that there is room for an improvement, and that to him or herself will be that point of healing. But in the general population, I think all of us understand that we have our flaws, we have our difficulties, and it would be nice if we can find a healing. Well, healing begins with our recognition of the problem, right? I mean, think about all of the miracles that we cite in the Bible of Jesus healing this or that person. There is an interaction that takes place. And one of the moments that really touched me in this book, Cardinal Bergoglio talks about almsgiving. He says, when somebody comes up to me in confession, I always ask them, do you give alms? And invariably, everyone will say, yes, I do. I give donations to this or that person. And then he says one more step. He says, do you touch the person? Do you look in the face of the person to whom you are giving alms? Do you touch his hand? And I immediately thought to myself, okay, how many times do we pass that guy at the end of the freeway off-ramp and we extend a dollar bill, we extend some change to him, but never do we extend our hand out to him and shake it? There's a series on our Epostle network called Inside the Pomegranate where Anish talks a lot about dealing with the homeless. And this is one of the most beautiful things. It's not about her giving to the homeless of food or supplies or even money, but it's about the time that she spends with the homeless. Actually touching them, actually hugging them, embracing them. This is a tough one. Oh, homeless person. He's like living on the streets. Sometimes you see the flies coming out of their head. Who wants to touch a person like that? Oh, but this is what's commanded of us. When you think about Jesus cleansing the lepers, you know what leprosy is? It's like your skin is falling off of you. There's sores. There's blood. It's open wounds. Oh, man. Who's going to get near someone like that? I mean, think about our society right now. You get on an airplane, people are wearing masks. Think about just the smallest sight of blood. If you've ever gone into a hospital and or given blood or anything, just think about all the precautions they take just before they extract a few drops of your blood, right? They have to wear gloves. They have to sanitize. They have to bring the needles that are completely sanitary, and they come in these disposable cases and so on and so on. Nobody touches anything. And here's Jesus to the leper who's got all these sores and bleeding. What does he do? He goes out and he touches them. And the healing comes about in that touch. Now let's extrapolate. Let's talk about ourselves. How often do we just kind of like whisk past somebody without really taking the time to share, without taking the time to interact? Well, no one's going to interact, right? Because now there's the ew factor. Ew! And on top of that, we start making fun of people. You know, it's big business right now. It's okay to laugh at people. And you have people that just get up. You know, I'm just amazed at the insensitivity that we have toward the downtrodden. It's okay to make fun of people like this. I know, there's all kinds of rationalization that goes along with it. Well, we make fun of them just to bring it to people's attention. but what is the fun in this? And the reason why I went to the Strawberry Alarm Clock song, Incense and Peppermint, you know, incense, what is that? It's that connection with our senses. When you light incense, you breathe it in. It takes you back. The smells take you back to a place. They make you alive. They make you realize that you're in a different place. The peppermint, it gives you that extra bit of comfort in life. And think about that in terms of what we do in our reaction to people. How much do we need to really interact with one another? It's essential. We don't these days. We've lost that interaction. I don't want to rag on the cell phones, but, you know, that's what it is. Look at the cell phones. Have you just, you know what? Here's something fun. Our youth ministry center is placed strategically across the street from a school. If you ever get a chance, just go outside of a school, particularly a high school, junior high, high school. Nobody's talking. I know that may be good, right? But everyone's got their head down. I think we're going to develop scoliosis or something, a curvature of the spine. People have their head down. Everyone's like looking at their texts. What text came in? And we've got this new posture in life, right? The head's down. Your hands are extended, holding a small cell phone, a smartphone, and you're texting. Big fat fingers on these small little keyboards. We're writing essays. We're writing all kinds of truths in these small little exhibitions of our life. And something's missing, that interaction with people. And so this is what I found really refreshing about this book on heaven and earth. It's an interaction. It's an interaction between a priest and a rabbi. And I think back on the idea of Gemaran. What is that interaction? The student with his mentor. Walking, sharing. I shared with you over the past few weeks about this new project that we're doing, the 100-year journey, as well as the 100 souls in his shoes. And all of this is being developed in this kind of situation. I've got to tell you, the 100-year journey, which is coming up, and I'll make sure that there's a link on our show notes. If you haven't checked that out, please check that out. That's going to be a very special portal that's being constructed by my friend Gregory Baylarian and myself. We're going to be exhibiting that during a couple weeks in April. And, you know, where we started off a couple years ago and where we are right now are two different places. And it's because of this process of interaction, of talking, of sharing with one another. In fact, it was funny, at the last meeting that we had, we end up at coffee shops talking. We were at a Starbucks, and I just looked at him, and I said, Gregory, I said, well, we got to be recording this stuff. And sure enough, we had our smartphones with us, and I pressed the button. Yes, I know, I just ragged on those smartphones, but we started recording. And this conversation, this dialogue, is a means by which we grow. So too in our faith. Never assume that that faith is something that you're stuck with. That faith is an evolutionary process. It's in the works. That begins when you're small, when you're young, when you're still nursing. You're interacting. There's that human touch with your parents. There's that human touch with the people who brought you up, with your friends, your brothers and sisters. That touch and exchange of ideas. It starts off when you reach up for that stove, right? And you know it's hot. There's something out there. And mommy slaps your hand, says, don't touch that. But you want to experiment anyway. And you touch it and you get burnt. And in that burnt process, that burning process, you understand that that is a forbidden place. You don't put your hands in the fire. You don't touch hot things. And so now you've learned. As you get closer to something, if it's hot, whoa, you back off. And just think about it, your cup of coffee. If you hadn't learned that, if you hadn't had that experience growing up, then what would you do? They'd pour you a cup of coffee and you'd just down it and you'd burn your whole mouth. But now we know that, hey, it's hot, okay? As it gets closer to our mouth, you feel that heat. You know it's something, and you experiment still. You take a little sip of that coffee. It burns a little bit of your mouth, you hold back. You might add some cream to it. You might wait a few minutes until it cools down. You might stir it. You experiment with it until it gets to a place that you can accept that cup of coffee. Same way with faith. There's nothing different about it. It hurts. There are portions of that faith that just don't make sense to you. You experiment with it. You play with it. You question it. And that's okay to do. That's okay to do. This is what I was saying about fundamentalism sometimes. This is the biggest problem I think I have with fundamentalism. It's like it's just given to you as some kind of do's and don'ts. This is what you do, this is what you don't do. This is what's written. Well, that's great, and it's written. You know, it's a lot of times people tell us because we're Armenian, they say, oh, what is that? And we rattle off this formula. We were the first Christian nation. Hey, guess what? I'm not the first Christian nation. There were some brave people who against the odds stood up and said, we will define ourselves as Christian. Despite what it may mean to us, despite being killed, despite being martyred, slain, I'm going to define myself. Those were the brave people, not me. Not me. I could say all I want that I belong to this group of people that are the first Christians on earth. But that doesn't buy me anything. That's something in the past. Somebody else experimented. Somebody else did what they had to do. Now, I cannot reap the benefits. I can experiment myself. I can engage in that dialogue myself and thereby become the person who I want to be. Now, I'm throwing this out, incense and peppermint. Peppermint. Delicious. Just an exciting aroma, too. I don't even know what the song is about. But I do know that those words conjure up these feelings inside of me, and I wanted to share them with you. So I left you with a lot of stuff today, a lot of things to really to ponder about. And it comes with an invitation for you to really to question, for you to really experiment, for you to engage in a dialogue. This is why I say, you know, don't leave the next step for just, you know, a Thursday to Thursday activity. Engage in a conversation. Question these things. Question them within your own circle of friends. You know, we go to churches and we expect the churches to be bending over this way or that way. These are institutions made by men. Let's be honest about it, okay? They are means by which the faith is transferred. But once it's transferred to you, you can't expect the church to chew it up and digest it for you. This is where you come in. Okay, it's been transferred to you. Now I've got it. Now what do I do with that faith? What do I take with me? How can I process that faith? How can I make that work inside of my life? I have difficulties. The world has difficulties. Somehow that faith needs to be realistic. It has to be relevant to the life that I am leading. And so you push yourself. You experiment. You talk. You question. You bring it all together. And this is what I'm challenging you to do. This is what the next step is about. This is actually the next step. It's that digestive process. Wow. Did we come up with that? Yeah, we did. Here's some more to digest from Susie.
Susie here. here again, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there is a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So, we look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless.
Thank you, Susie, for that important announcement. And I wanted to take some time to talk about what's going on over here right now, because I do appreciate all of your sincere wishes, your prayers for this ministry, your support for this ministry. I want to share with you, I got an email this morning. It was from one of my brothers in Christ, another priest serving in the Eastern Diocese. And he says, there's a little bit of, I don't want it to sound like we're beating our own drum, is it called, or blowing our own horn. So let me just kind of cut to the chase. It says, don't stop sending out your messages. If you get enough people angry, that means they're listening. Keep up the great work. Know that your words are inspiring. Now, I'm not beating my own drum. I'm not blowing my own horn. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes when you're standing on this side of the microphone, and as beautiful as Susie is in the corner over there, and as nice as Ken is with his headphones on, you just kind of feel like, okay, who's listening out there? And really, it's really remarkable the kind of response that we get to this podcast. Remarkable in the sense that it is a dialogue. It is a dialogue where I'm throwing out ideas and people are reacting. They're saying this or that about it. And some, you know, it's not all positive. Like I said earlier, there's people who write to me and say that, you know, you're going to burn in hell. You're you're destroying what's out there. Okay, you know, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But I'm telling you that when you look at Scripture, when you look at the faith of our forefathers, when you look at the prayers that have been written through the centuries, and most of all, you look at the life that has been led by this group of people, you come to a certain realization, and this is the evolutionary process, that you come to this realization that there is a power that is greater than ourselves. It's not just me. It is a power that we define as God, that we call God. Other people may call it other things, may call it the strength of the universe or the power of the universe, whatever you may want to call it, but it is outside of ourselves. Now this Sunday, there is what we call here in America, the Super Bowl game. And I'm saying here in America because I know most of the world is kind of tuned into other things, other activities, such as the World Cup, okay? I know that a few years ago, or last year was it, when the World Cup was played and people were gathering around, people were stomping on each other. I know there's an enthusiasm about that. Well, the Super Bowl is that equivalent here in America. And, you know, the Super Bowl is an interesting event that takes place because it is the exchange of millions of billions of dollars. For what? A game that defines who is the greatest football team for that particular year. And do you believe that for $5-6 million, you can get a commercial on this Super Bowl that will last all of 1 minute? Yeah, that's it. You can pay $5 million and have yourself broadcast on this Super Bowl. And people do that. Doritos. It's a chip. It's a tortilla chip. And they will spend millions of dollars to persuade you to eat this type of tortilla chip. Budweiser beer. It's a beer. They will spend millions of dollars to persuade you, with their horses and all, that it's a cool thing to drink this beer. Okay, that's fine. Everybody's entitled to spend their money the way they want to. Now, it comes down to us. What are we doing to spend our money and our resources to publicize ourselves and the faith that we have? Well, one of the greatest things that you can do, and I share this with you, is your prayer life, is your donations to this. But how about living the experience, living the life that God intends you to live? And in that, people then look around, and that's really the best advertisement you have, because then people look at you and say, hey, wow, it's working for him or her. Hey, it's working in your life. Okay, maybe there's something good about it. I mean, after all, that beer works in someone else's life. So maybe this faith is working in your life. And think about that. You become a walking advertisement, a walking billboard, a walking commercial for your faith. And I'm challenging you to take me up on this offer right now. Because what's going to happen in the next few months is we have an opportunity as In His Shoes to really put our money where our mouth is. In this sense, we want to live out the faith. And Christ invites us to a faith that's awesome. That's awe-inspiring. Because it is based on love. It is that most human, essential emotion that we all are capable of having. To love one another. He shares that with us. He says, you have to love one another. Well, how? By extending yourself. Isn't that what he did when he extended his arms up on the cross? He says, okay, I'm going to show you how much love I have. Here it is. Here's my expression. I'm going up to the cross for you. Can we do the same in our lives? Now, in a few months, we're going to have this 100 souls in His Shoes. We're asking people throughout the world to walk in the shoes of others. Do you know that in April of this year, it's going to be the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide? Now, who was martyred in the Armenian Genocide? Not me, not you, but it was a group of people who put their faith first, who said that I'm willing to go out on the line, because many people were given that opportunity to convert and didn't, and instead were thrown into a river, were slaughtered, were raped, mutilated, killed. Now that 100th anniversary is a testament to their faith, not to mine. I want to be a testament to my faith now. And the only way that I could do that is by sharing myself, by giving of myself, by walking in the shoes of others. And here we have this opportunity to do exactly that. In April of this year, to coincide with the 100th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, we're going to be looking at genocide in general. Do you know that there is a genocide going on right now in Darfur? Do you know that there are acts of hatred all around us? That, except for the name genocide, reflect all of the ugliness, all of the atrocities that were seen 100 years ago. We see this going on in Syria. Have we forgotten just Syria, just last year? We were collecting for Syria. It's all but forgotten. Why? Because the news media doesn't make it a top priority. This week, we're going to be talking about Super Bowl, right? So who has time to look at some of these negative things? How about Iraq? Destruction. Standing up again. Destroyed again. How about the entire Middle East? How about in your own backyard? Whether it's here in the United States, in Australia, in Canada, in Europe, in our own backyards, the prejudice that exists. Prejudice that can be cultivated into acts of violence. Now we have an opportunity to do something about this. The 100 souls in His Shoes are specific programs that will be addressing issues of genocide in a different way. not by saying, hey, look what happened to us, but because it happened to us, now we have an obligation to help others in need. Are you ready to put your faith on the line? Are you ready to help others in need? I hope you are. That's what the next step is. That's what In His Shoes is to walk in the shoes of others. And I'm calling on our listeners in particular because you're my first line. You're the starting team. You're going out on that field. The ball's being punted to you. It's in your hands now. You can't deflate it. It's pretty full. Are you going to run with it? Are you going to pass it? Are you going to kick it? What are you going to do? In each of these cases, it's up to us to decide how we're going to react to that ball being in our possession. Today is that day. With Susie's message a few minutes ago, I'm inviting you to get involved in the In His Shoes ministry. It's a dynamic ministry. It's a ministry that's unlike any other because it is an action ministry. I need your help. I need your support. I need your prayers. And in all of this, we put it together and we focus on He which needed our help. He who needed our prayers and our support, but we all abandoned Him at the cross. Now we have an opportunity. Just as He said, there will be those on my right side and my left side. Those on my right side have helped out people because they have seen my presence in those people. When you have done to the least of my brothers, you've done it to me. In other words, in those people, we see the likeness of Christ. And so now we have that opportunity to help others. Take this challenge. Get on board. What I need right now is 100 emails coming. Send it to feedback@epostle.net. It's as easy as that. Say, I'm on board. How can I get involved? I'm ready to get my community involved. I'm ready to get two or three people involved. Where two or three are gathered in my name, there I shall be, says Jesus. Okay, can we get two or three? I'm not asking for a lot. 100 souls is not a lot of people, but it is made up of two or three people here and there. It is made up of communities of 10 or 20 people here or there. And we can do it. This is a statement that becomes a way of life for all of us. I'm asking you to join me. 100 souls in His shoes. I want to leave you with that today. I want to thank you for joining us today. I know you have all kinds of stuff to do, but I know you make some time to spend this near an hour. What is it? What are we at? 40, 50 minutes every week to get together. And I so much appreciate all of your prayers and your support. Keep me in your prayers. Keep this ministry in your prayers as I keep you in my prayers. For the wonderful team who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Voskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your podcast out.